128 years ago, a landmark in the history of New Zealand was made at Waitangi in the Bay of Islands. And today, February the 6th, the events commemorated in the celebrations marking Waitangi Day 1968. This is the first ceremony to be attended by His Excellency Sir Arthur Porritt, both as Governor General and Chairman of the Waitangi National Trust Board. And although the commemoration of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi is confined principally to this idyllic spot in the northern part of the North Island, the ceremony is of direct significance to all New Zealanders. And this evening, Waitangi Day 1968 is being shown simultaneously on all television channels throughout the country. At the moment, the band of the Royal New Zealand Navy marching into position, there is the Royal Guard on the Treaty House side of the flagstaff in their position, and the flagstaff party just coming to attention at the base of the flagstaff. The band of the Royal New Zealand Navy playing the march past the Royal New Zealand Navy, composed by the Director of Music of the Royal New Zealand Navy, Lieutenant Commander McLean, and being given its first public performance. The Royal Guard from HMNZS Otago. The flagstaff party have the Union flag, which will later be hoisted to the top of the flagstaff as the official proceedings get underway. Most of you will be familiar with the background to the Treaty of Waitangi, but here are a few details to refresh your memory.
1840, a young queen on the throne of England about to marry a foreign prince. Dickens wrote the old curiosity shop, and the penny postage was introduced. But here in New Zealand, during the 1830s, representations were made to the British government because of lawlessness. As many as 150 ships coming into the Bay of Islands in one season. French explorers active throughout the length of the country. The New Zealand Company itself very active. And so James Busby was sent as residence in 1832 to see what he could do to speak and control the activities of the British residents. But he had little power and was of little help. So in 1839, a reluctant government in England sent Captain Hobson as Lieutenant Governor over a white population of 150. He landed in January the 29th, established himself by proclamation at Russell, and set about achieving a treaty whereby Maori should cede all powers of sovereignty to Queen Victoria, but in return be guaranteed possession of their lands and achieve the privileges and rights of British subjects. Hobson first met the chiefs of the Maori peoples on this lawn on February the 5th. The following day, on February the 6th, 1840, 45 chiefs signed the treaty, and within a few months, it had been signed by a total of 512 chieftains of Maori tribes.
And in the middle of the picture at the moment, the flagstaff, and at the base of this flagstaff is the spot where the treaty was signed. And now moving on to the treaty grounds here in front of the historic Treaty House at Waitangi are the members of the Whakatohia Maori group. This group has come from Apotiki, from parts of the East Coast and from the Bay of Plenty. It's a custom at the Waitangi Day ceremony each year for the Maori group to come from different parts of New Zealand. And for the first time, these Maori people are here to celebrate this occasion, which is significant to both European and Maori in this country. This group was specially formed for the occasion. And now, here we see the Bay of Islands itself. And there, with the Norfolk Pine just to the left of your screen, and this deep blue water, we see this very tranquil spot, and Cape Brett in the background, in the foreground, Tapeka Point.
And the camera moves across to Maiki Hill. Nearby is Russell, but on this historic hill, four flagstaffs were chopped down within a few months in 1884 and 1885 by Honi Hickey, who, though he signed the treaty, later regretted having done so. This flagstaff, the fifth, was replaced by the Maoris 20 years later. And the town of Russell itself, originally Kororarika, a Maori settlement largely taken over by white settlers from 1827 as a base for trading and whaling. Many ships coming in, perhaps 150 in a season, though it was largely destroyed by fire as a result of attacks in 1844.
We're just passing round the bay now, looking at the general scene. As we move around past Rongo Bay, just there disappearing on your screen, off to the left, that little inlet with the waters of the Bay of Islands.
In this Rongo Bay, at the present time, is an interesting experiment where oyster cultivation is in progress.
And there is a general view of the treaty grounds at Waitangi. In the foreground, we have many of the invited guests. In the background, the hills beyond the Bay of Islands. And then, here is another part of the Bay of Islands, Motumairi Island.
Motumairi Island, small though it is, and steep, had a special significance to the Maoris who lived in this area. It was set aside as a training and educational establishment for the sons of chieftains. They were, for periods, withdrawn from tribal life, and here they learned something of the legends, the responsibilities, the folklore, and the duties of their rank.
Beyond that again, Taylor Island, and now to the left of the picture, we have Okeatu Point, with Opua in the background.
Okeatu chosen by Captain Hobson as the site for the first capital of New Zealand, a decision not well received because the capital was later moved to Auckland.
And now the glorious beaches with the bush-covered hills behind of Paihia.
Here at Paihia, the Reverend Henry Williams, a former captain under Lord Nelson at Copenhagen, established a mission station in 1823. For 7 years, he and his family lived in Rapa huts until more permanent buildings were established. Here, a few years later, William Colenso established the first printing press in New Zealand, a press on which copies of the treaty were later printed. And here Williams built the first British ship to be built in New Zealand. On this beach, a 60-ton brig built for trading with Sydney was launched in the presence of 4,000 Maoris.
And there, with one full sweep of the cameras tonight, we've seen the complete surround to the scene at Waitangi tonight in this part of the North Island known as the Bay of Islands. And there in the picture at the moment is the recently built Waitangi Hotel. And it's from here that the official party will leave, that is, His Excellency, the Governor-General, Sir Arthur Porritt and Lady Porritt, and Miss Joanna Porritt, as they proceed to the treaty grounds, only about 2 minutes by road distant, for the formal occasion of the evening. There's the Royal Guard in front of the flagstaff. This flagstaff has particular significance, as although we have at the other end of the treaty grounds the treaty house itself, it was not here that the actual treaty was signed. It's understood that the negotiations for and the actual signing of the treaty took place approximately on the spot now marked by the flagstaff. And in fact, at the base of the flagstaff is a tablet that was presented by a former Governor-General, Lord Bledisloe, and Lady Bledisloe, and the inscription on the tablet reads, "On this spot, on the 6th day of February 1840, was signed the Treaty of Waitangi, under which New Zealand became part of the British Empire."
This flagstaff, 112 feet high, was erected in 1947 and cut from two kauri trees in government state reserves. The work involved in presenting the flagstaff took over a year.
Now, there is the Whakatohia Maori Concert Party facing the Treaty House and the official guests. And I would like to mention at this stage that with us this evening is Henare Te Ua of the NZBC Whangarei, who's to comment on the Maori ceremonial aspect of the celebrations. And they are the men of the party. Now, this group numbers between 90 and 100. They come from the east coast of New Zealand and Opotiki and the Bay of Plenty, but the nucleus of the group is formed of the nucleus of members of two local cultural groups, the Waiweka Youth Club and the Ngāpōtiki Club. The Maoris will later take part in the challenge, haka, and welcome to His Excellency the Governor-General on his arrival on the treaty grounds, and following this evening's proceedings, the ceremonial group will perform a concert for the people gathered here at Waitangi. And there, in the background of the scene, and dominating the scene, is the Treaty House of Waitangi.
Originally built as a residency for James Busby prior to the treaty, this colonial Georgian-style architected house was erected in 1834. Oddly enough, the timber was cut and prepared in New South Wales, but this was because the architect lived in New South Wales at the time. It was built of jara, ironbark, cedar, but later the walls and the roof, the shingles of the roof, were replaced with kauri. At a later date still, the wings of the building were extended. Now a museum, but its greater importance is as a symbol where real New Zealand history began.
And inside this house, John, is a very interesting collection of artifacts, pictures and furniture and documents and so on, all connected with the history of the area. And surrounding the house, we have the most beautiful gardens. We have been enjoying the most glorious sunshine in the Bay of Islands the last few days. And this morning, as we wandered through the gardens of Treaty House, we noticed the beautiful hibiscus in bloom. And surrounding the house, and in fact surrounding most of the treaty grounds itself, are the most impressive trees. But there you can see the beautiful gardens. We can also notice some of the Sea Scouts who will be joining the Boy Scouts, who are also there to welcome the Governor General when he arrives at the gates of the Treaty House. And there is a view of the hotel at Waitangi as the official party leaves to take part in the ceremony this evening, with the bridge across the estuary of the Waitangi River in the background, a Norfolk pine in the foreground. And there come the cars of the official party. We can see the Vice-Regal car there in the middle of your screen, carrying His Excellency and Her Excellency as they move towards Waitangi, with the golf course there in the background for those familiar with this delightful area of New Zealand. Back at the treaty grounds again, we have the treaty house in the background. Nearer at hand, the members of the Whakatohea Maori ceremonial group. Nearer again, on the Treaty House side of the flagstaff, the 100 members of the Royal Guard from HMNZS Otago, the officer of the guard being Lieutenant Commander G.J. Burke. And now here comes the Rolls-Royce with Sir Arthur Porritt and Lady Porritt. This is a great moment for us all, and particularly for Sir Arthur Porritt himself, because after all, this is the first time that he has appeared at a Waitangi function, not only as chairman of the Waitangi National Trust Board, but also as Governor General of New Zealand. And there are the gates of the Treaty House.
These gates were erected by descendants of James Busby in relatively recent years as a memorial to the first British resident in New Zealand. Nearby is also a memorial to Captain Hobson, and a sundial on the lawn within a few yards was erected a few years ago to commemorate the coronation of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Surrounding the treaty house, among the various types of trees, totara, oak trees, and pohutukawa.
Sir Arthur Porritt, in the Governor-General's tropical uniform, worn with a topi, he wears white gloves, and behind him is Lady Porritt. Miss Joanna Porritt, just to the right of the screen, the two aides-de-camp to the Governor-General, and also Miss Rowena Brassey, the fair hair, the lady-in-waiting. And as they move now off the screen towards the Treaty House itself. Very large crowd gathered here tonight, John.
Probably about 4,000 or 5,000. We've spoken to a number of these people. They're drawn naturally from all parts of New Zealand. Many of those we've spoken to have come here year after year. For a good many others, it means a special visit from a long distance. Overseas visitors include visitors from Western Australia and the United Kingdom. During the course of the year, probably 70,000 to 80,000 people visited the Treaty House. And as you see, this great open lawn stretches as something of a peninsula at the estuary of the Waitangi River.
The ceremony of this evening will comprise the arrival of the official party on the treaty grounds. Then will follow a challenge, haka, and welcome by the Maori people, the inspection of the Royal Guard and band, speeches appropriate to this historic day, then the most impressive ceremony of beat retreat by the band of the Royal New Zealand Navy, and the naval sunset ceremony by the Navy contingent, the benediction pronounced by the Reverend Rogers of Hamilton, then following a moment of darkness, the illumination of the ships in the harbour. And speaking of the ships in the harbour, at the moment, there's the Otago out in the Bay of Islands. Following the illumination of the ships in the harbour, we shall see also the floodlighting of the flagstaff and the treaty house. And that is the end of the formal part of the evening, although later we'll be returning to Waitangi for a concert programme by the Whakatohea Maori group.
On the day on which the treaty was signed, William Colenso reported numerous canoes gliding from every direction. They're not here today, but the representatives of those canoes are here as you see them.
The men there with their taihas at the ready, standing at attention. There's just that little moment of stillness as we await the arrival of the Governor General, when His Excellency moves from the Treaty House. A fanfare will be sounded by the band of the Royal New Zealand Navy. Then His Excellency will move forward at the head of the procession of the official party towards the entrance to the arena. And then, as he arrives 10 paces in front of the official party chairs, the challenger will run forward, place a dart at His Excellency's feet, and begin the Maori welcome. And there are the Northland Scouts and the Sea Scouts moving into their position to get a good look, lined up just in front of the front row of official guests.
It is well to remember on this occasion that this estate was a gift to the nation by Lord Bledisloe when he was governor. In 1932, he purchased the site and gave it with some 1,200 acres to the nation. And then was set up the Waitangi National Trust Board, whose care and attention to the preservation of this historic area deserves our very great thanks indeed.
In fact, the people of New Zealand have many reasons to be grateful to Lord and Lady Bledisloe, and Lord Bledisloe desired that the site of the treaty signing should be preserved as a national monument. It was in 1947 that the first ceremony in celebration of Waitangi Day was held at this spot. This was in the daytime, but in 1960, at the request of Lord Cobham, there was held a sunset ceremony exactly the same as the one we're to see this evening. There's the Guard of Honour in front of the flagstaff in their summer whites. And speaking of summer, this has been the weather we have been enjoying here. Today has been a glorious day in the Bay of Islands, and the sun has just gone down, and the skies are just being streaked with the colours of sunset, and gradually the dusk is stealing over the grounds at Waitangi. And in fact, you will notice as the proceedings get underway tonight that gradually the scene will get darker, but then we'll get the floodlighting coming up on the grounds, and believe me, it becomes a most impressive and a most moving sight. Tonight we're showing the celebration of Waitangi from Waitangi in the Bay of Islands in a network television presentation right throughout New Zealand. The door of the Treaty House. There's the shingle roof of the Treaty House showing up very, very clearly. This shingle roof made, I think very appropriately, being New Zealand, of kauri. In fact, the general flooring is also in kauri. The door opening now, and there's the Governor General, His Excellency Sir Arthur Porritt, and now a fanfare will be sounded. Guests stand. Sir Arthur Porritt moves forward. Behind him, Lady Porritt. Governor General stands alone to receive the challenge. And the challenger is Mr. Ben Gage of the Whakatohia Group.
The challenge itself harks back from very early days, the times when the Maoris were in their strongholds. If they saw a party advancing towards their stronghold, to ascertain whether they were friendly or whether they were not friendly, they would send out a warrior, such as Ben Gage now, who would place a dart on the ground just to keep it. If the visitor is friendly, he'll come forward and pick up the dart. His Excellency has picked up the dart, so he comes in friendship. Now the challenge has been completed, and as is traditional, seeing this personage is friendly, then he should. And so the Whakatohia Maori group go into the main haka or haka taparahi, and this will be Te Rā o Te Kāwana, or the Day of the Governor.
now the aerial view of the Whakatohea group as they perform the haka. The haka taparahi is led by a young boy, Peter Peawini, as they move to Te Rā Tatawana, the day of the governor, a tribute to the governor general.
This is Norway Te Ope, and predominant in this will be the women of the Whakatohea Māori group.
This puhiri is led by Moana Kurarangi, who has an important part to play in this evening's occasion. She not only leads the puhiri, but she will later in the ceremony present the bouquet to Her Excellency Lady Pollitt.
Hey,
the background there, there are two focal points of interest this evening at the moment. Not only the members of the Whakatohia ceremonial group, but also the Governor-General himself, as he stands, a solitary figure in his white uniform, to watch this welcome, which is, after all, a personal welcome to him.
Is Rangi Pu Kohoko. This is a very, very well known and also a very, very old haka.
And there in the background of the Maori party is Opua, the port, and to the left slightly, Okeatu Point, and then to the left again, we have Motumaere and Taylor Islands. Aerial view again as the Maori ceremonial party, which had been spread across the line of advance, splits into two facing inwards, forming a lane to the saluting dais. Following this, the royal guard will shoulder arms, the bugles will sound the alert, and then the Commodore Auckland, Commodore Carr, will advance to meet His Excellency and escort him to the saluting dais. His Excellency is ready on the saluting dais. The Royal Guard and band will give the royal salute. The Royal Guard will present arms, and the band will play the first six bars of the national anthem.
Royal Guard! Royal salute! Present! Hey!
Bugles have just sounded, carry on. The guard is ordering arms, and the officer of the guard will report to His Excellency, who, followed by the Commodore Auckland, will inspect the Royal Guard and the front rank of the band. And there's the officer of the guard, who is Lieutenant Commander G.J. Burke, reporting to His Excellency the Governor-General.